to the Holmdel Township Public Schools Board of Education meeting. Statements hereby made that adequate notice of this meeting was given by posting written notice prominently on the bulletin board in the office of the Board of Education, the district's website, and sent to the four district schools. The mailing and/or hand delivery of said notice to the designated newspapers, the Asbury Park Press, Independent, the PLG, PSG, PSA, PTSO, SAB presidents, and student representatives to the board, and filing with the clerk of Holmdel Township Police Headquarters and Public Library. Meetings of the board are open to the public, and all members of the community should feel free to participate. There will be two opportunities for the public to speak. The first is at the beginning for agenda items only, and the second is at the end for other items. Any individual desiring to speak shall give his or her name, address, and the group of any that is represented. The presentation shall be as brief as possible, but no more than 3 minutes per individual. There are certain matters that may be brought before the board that cannot be immediately addressed in public. Such matters may be referred by the president to a board committee and or the superintendent for consideration or resolution. The board vests in its president or other presiding officer authority to terminate the remarks of any individual if she deems it in the best interest of those present to do so. May I have a roll call, please?
Ms. Flynn.
Here.
Mr. Sokol. I think we'll be joining us remotely. Mr. Reddy.
Present.
Mrs. Biamonte.
Here.
Mr. Wall.
Here.
Mr. Foster.
Here.
Mr. Hammer.
Here.
Mrs. Urbanski.
Here.
Mrs. Zhang.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Can you all rise for Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I know. I'm just making sure. Do you have that resolution done yet? Oh, okay. All right. Cool. All right. I have first, I would like to do a presentation to one of our high school juniors. Giaz Umarov, I hope I said it right, was recently acknowledged by tech giant Apple for notifying the company of a security problem in its security update. This is the second time Apple has publicly acknowledged him for identifying a security issue. He found the first bug at age 14 when he figured out how to bypass lock screens or control iPhones remotely. He's a member of our high school cybersecurity club and is enrolled in advanced placement computer science. So I wanted to welcome you here tonight, Giaz, and give you this certificate on behalf of the Holmdel Board of Education.
Thank you for coming up this way.
Great, thank you.
Okay, tonight we're, and you know, I want to help, we have some alumni here. We have a number of alumni here, but we have alumni from our first high school graduating class here tonight. And they're here to, we're having wonderful celebrations this weekend, which the Board of Ed is, and all the members of the public are invited to enjoy in. They'll be at our football game. There'll be a special presentation on Friday night. Saturday, we're having a luncheon here and a tour of the building for our alumni as they come home to see everything that we've done with the referendum and all the new work. And then Sunday, they get to go over and see what we've done over here at SATS. I would also like to use this opportunity to invite the members of the public to come here on Saturday around, is it 1:30? 1:30, because at that time we'll be dedicating the street that runs right in front of Homedale High School in Sats in the name of their superintendent or their high school principal, Dr. White. So I just want to, again, recognize you all tonight. We'll be on a resolution tonight, so I want to thank you both for coming. And we're looking forward to Friday night to, we will make that dedication in the football game and then again on Saturday. So thank you both for coming. And the resolution will be read. I don't think we have much of an agenda, so I will read it separately in the next few minutes, if that's okay. Thank you, guys. All right. Student representatives, you're up.
Hello, everyone. I hope everyone is doing well. The student report will be a little longer today due to the first month of school starting. So right now, seniors who have an early decision or early action deadline for college applications are requesting their senior meeting with their guidance counselors and preparing to send their application for the October 15th and November 1st deadline. So of course, this year, there's no virtual option for high school students. It's great to see everyone back in school. I think without a doubt, I could say that being back in school is positively affecting students. Students are definitely more engaged in the material that they are learning and definitely more involved with the Homedale community. It's great to see activities returning to normal and see our school spirit back on display. With temperatures in place, such as wearing masks, with measures in place, such as wearing masks, temperature checks, and plexiglass, I personally believe that a safe learning environment for Homedale High School that addresses the pandemic is in place. And I think we can all agree that it would be beneficial to continue this way for the rest of the school year. I would now like to hand it over to Trinity to complete the student report.
During these past few weeks of school, many students have been readjusting to the in-person, on-paper learning experience after having been stuck at home for the better part of the last school year. We are all getting used to elevated expectations as we navigate through the new halls, but in all of this, it is uplifting to see school spirit returning to Homedale High School again. For some recent news, the annual club fair was held at HHS today. Over 30 clubs were represented, from peer leadership programs to academic teams to cultural groups, and we saw so many students signing up for new activities. The full list of clubs is available on the Homedale High School website. Club participation is an invaluable way for students to be exposed to new volunteer opportunities, and it will no doubt foster passions that last far beyond high school. Extra help will also be beginning in October. I encourage all students to be proactive in their classes by attending their teacher's sessions when needed. Late buses will also start running, so don't hesitate to stay after school for help. On another note, juniors should keep in mind the upcoming PSATs. The PSAT is a significant opportunity to qualify for the National Merit Scholarship and other grant programs, so please take advantage of the information and resources offered by the Guidance Department. Also, good luck to everyone taking the SATs this Saturday. All in all, though it may be a time of growing pains for a lot of us, I sincerely hope that my fellow students will be able to make great progress in the upcoming school year. We are excited for the wonderful opportunities to come, and that concludes the student report.
Thank you both. Any questions for our students?
I got an easy one. I see the parking lot spots are getting painted again. Any comments on that? A lot of kids do it, or I mean, it looked like, you know, a lot of kids were there this weekend. Even there were some people there this evening.
It really meant a lot for the senior class to be able to park, to paint their parking lot this year. They should not be painting it this evening, though. There was a specific allotted of time last week to paint the paint their spots.
Well, I love the rule following over there. Reminder. It's awesome. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. And I hope you could join in on the festivities with our first graduating class this weekend. We'd love to see you guys. Okay, who's next? The superintendent report from memory. It is.
Thank you, Madam President. I want to talk about the opening of school, since this is the first board meeting since we opened school this year with everyone in person. It's quite a change from the end of 1920. And certainly a major change from 2021. And I have to say that things ran extraordinarily well. And I would begin first by recognizing Laura Carducci, our transportation coordinator, I am sure many of you have heard there's a bus driver shortage throughout the country. Massachusetts was planning on calling out some of their National Guard members to drive buses. Lara was able to really do a great job making sure that our buses were running and running smoothly. As with any school year, there are always a few minor adjustments to be made, and those have been made. And we still have one or two that we have to make because of the really challenging issue of one or two items. We're working on it, but sometimes the solutions are not that easy to find and to implement. But she did a fantastic job and needs to be commended for it. Also, we recognize our staff. I always speak about our teachers and what a wonderful job they're doing, and they do that. But I also want to mention our support staff, whether it be our secretaries, custodians, maintenance men, groundskeepers. They all have stepped up, and when we opened school this year, the place looked fantastic and ran very smoothly. I also want to acknowledge our administrators who are grappling with issues every day that they've never had to grapple with in the past. And while we are getting into routine, I do think there will be a little more adjustments. And hopefully, as things improve, we'll make some bigger adjustments during the month of October. We posted our COVID numbers today. They are really quite good. Among our staff, the numbers are very strong, very low, bunch of zeros. We still have some issues with students needing to be quarantined because they're symptomatic or they've been in direct contact. And the direct contact really occurs outside of school, because within school, following the guidelines from the state of New Jersey, if the students have their mask in place, then there is no direct contact and there is no need for quarantining unless symptoms begin to reveal themselves. However, and this is important, for our teachers, there is direct contact. So if we have a student in a class who contracts COVID, and that teacher has been working with that student as per the direct contact guidelines, then that teacher and support staff will have to quarantine. We have posted the most up-to-date quarantine guidelines on our website, and we encourage you to look at them. They're a little complicated. You really have to have a specific need in mind as to whether or not you have to quarantine. And all the questions we're experiencing right now revolve around people planning on traveling either in the near future or down the road when the holidays arrive. We will update those as more information is provided to us. And last and certainly not least, I really want to commend our students, whether at Village, Indian Hill, SATs, or the high school. They have done a tremendous job of adjusting to the new normal, which is wearing a mask. I have to tell you, when we were planning to open the school a week or two before, our greatest concern was dealing with the mask option, or the mask requirement, I should call it. And I have to tell you, almost without exception, everyone has been very cooperative. Everyone has been following the directive. And the one or two minor situations we have not been with the wearing of the mask, but wearing the proper mask. And when those one or two parents were contacted, we explained to them why the mask they provided with the child was not up to code, and the changes were made. So overall, it's been a fantastic start, and I look forward to a very prosperous year. We are this evening on the agenda approving some teachers to work either before or after the school day to work with students who are struggling. This is very important as we try to catch up to the learning that didn't take place during COVID. So we look forward to that happening. It's important to know that those positions are being funded by the ESSERS grant, which is federal money to help schools adjust and make changes to support students during the COVID pandemic. And we look forward to that being very effective and our students gaining the knowledge they need to be on grade level by the end of this school year. And that concludes my report this evening.
Thank you. Any questions? Any HIB reports?
We do not have any HIBs this year so far.
I knew that answer. Okay. Committee reports. Terrence, do you have a report?
That was a committee of the whole, so I would defer to the committee of the whole. I don't have an individual report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Elizabeth, do you have a committee report?
Of course. This is the report for Curriculum Instruction Special Services Committee. The committee met in person on Wednesday, September 22nd at 9 a.m. for its Curriculum Instruction Special Services Committee meeting. The following agenda items were discussed. 1, recommendation for approval. The committee discussed items recommended by the interim superintendent for approval, including, but not limited to, new policies and regulations, professional development for staff, district staff and non-public staff members, standardized testing schedule for 2021-2022 school year, superintendent district goals, mentoring plan, $1,000 equitable excellence scholarship to Suisse Josti from the Equitable Foundation, a donation of $1,982 from the HYAA, textbook adoptions, curriculum guides for adoption and field trips. 2, special services. Dr. Stromslin presented special services recommendations for approval, including, but not limited to, student placement, home hospital instruction, functional vision assessment, Learn Well, IDEA/ARP fund for an October 1st submission, and a new pre-K disabled class at Village School. 3, policies and regulations. Dr. Charney presented regulations and policies, which included mandated policies on diversity, mental health, African-American accomplishments, child sex abuse, and COVID updates, which is the road forward. 4, class sizes. Dr. Charney presented data on class sizes for each school and classroom. A discussion was had about how many students are in classes and the school policy on class sizes. Dr. Charney stated that studies have shown that larger class sizes is not detrimental to learning in the secondary grades. Some high school classes, such as AP Macroeconomics, have 30 students in them. Dr. Charney does not see this as a problem because these classes contain the more academically accelerated students. A discussion was had about placing aides in the kindergarten classes that are 24 students or larger. Dr. Stromslin said some ICR high school classes are overbooked and she is actively remediating this problem. Dr. Flynn stated that a few years ago, board policy was instituted to limit class size to 24 in upper school and 22 in the lower school. She was actively looking for the written policy. 5, student instruction during quarantine. The committee discussed teaching for students in quarantine, which includes having access to Google Class and Google Meet during class time and student teacher contact for follow-up and questions in the chat room. 6, rapid COVID testing grant. The administration has applied for a New Jersey grant that would allow students who have been exposed to COVID to have an on-site rapid antigen test, and if the students are negative, they can attend school. 7, high school students with 504 plans. High school students with 504 plans will be overseen by the principal or a designee. The high school and SATs have revised sets of processes and protocols that are being shared for their consideration and use. 8, standardized testing schedule. The testing schedule and a letter were sent to parents and guardians at the beginning of the year. State mandated Start Strong assessments will be administered at the end of September through early October. These new tests will produce immediate scores and the performance data will gauge learning loss and help guide instruction. There will be no additional time taken away from class teaching time as benchmark tests utilizing Linkit will be used as a common assessments. These may replace unit tests and quarterlies. The NJSLA will be administered this spring. New tests include InterOrbit, which tests science standards in SATs. Linkit will be introduced to Indian Hill this year. The in-school SAT is to be determined. The PSAT is scheduled for October 13th. 9, PLC. Teachers will make use of the new PLC, which is a Professional Learning Communities Teacher Planning Time in Village and Indian Hill. Teachers will meet daily to collaboratively work on lesson plans, data analysis, constructing collaborative lessons that target student needs, and review teaching resources. In order to accommodate the different schedules, teachers may be assigned different tasks with a point person being responsible for coordinating these tasks and relaying important information. One period of cycle, the goal would be to gather teachers by grade level to review data and outcomes. Substitute coverage may be necessary for this step. Number 10, superintendent goals. Dr. Cherney presented a detailed plan of superintendent goals for the 2021-2022 school year. This five-point plan included the following. Number one, build capacity of all certified staff to analyze data to track student growth. Number two, align instruction and assessment with the New Jersey student learning standards and differentiate instruction for all students to maximize student achievement. Number three, implement Achieve NJ in accordance with state regulations and district strategic goals. Number four, support the expansion of a full-day pre-K program. Number five, expand social emotional learning in each school. Number 11, observation of and evaluations. Dr. Charney presented a working document of the teacher evaluation schedule. Number 12, Genesis teacher training. The committee was shown a Genesis teacher training instruction video. Dr. Charney stressed how the teachers are receiving PD on Genesis. Number 13, mentor plan. Dr. Charney discussed the teacher mentor plan and detailed staff induction guide. The staff induction guide, which delineates roles and responsibilities, will be a useful tool going forward for both mentors and mentees. The new teachers will have a mentor during the first year and a buddy mentor the second year. Number 14, guidance. Angela Thomas, the high school vice principal, is overseeing the high school guidance department and will be meeting with the department weekly. More student interaction is encouraged, and there is a goal that counselors will meet with each student four times a year and log meetings with students. Each counselor is scheduled to be downstairs and available to students during unit lunch on a rotating basis. Guidance has the following goals: increasing student achievement, data-driven decision-making, improving school's culture, and building relationships with stakeholders. A guidance meeting agenda was shown to the committee. Number 15. Lesson plans. The committee was updated on the progress to enhance teacher lesson plans. Teachers are learning how to create a lesson plan in the PLC during the first marking period. The second marking period, a model plan will be required by all teachers. The next meeting date is October 20th at 9:15 in the morning.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any questions? And I'm glad you went over class sizes because I got a bunch of questions about that. So I told them we did go over that.
Can you hear me?
I'm sorry, Mike.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. Listen, I just had one quick question, Elizabeth. Can you reread that first goal that you got from Jeff?
Sure. Hold on. Let me find it. Build capacity of all certificated staff to analyze data to track student growth.
Okay, so what did Jeff mean by build capacity? Does he mean adding more staff? Does he mean creating a new hierarchy to handle this challenge? Is he talking about more professional training? I kind of pushed this question over to Lee. I think Lee or Jeff would probably be better suited to answer it. But I just want to understand what build capacity means.
Hi, Mr. Sokol. The answer to the question is very simply, we want to provide more training and support to our teachers and our administrators so they can take the data we receive from the MAPS program, that's MAPS program, and link it and iReady, and use that data to drive instruction and make informed decisions on how we ensure that every student learns what he or she needs to learn. It's not any additional staff. We worked on this summer. We sent a team of people virtually to the Harvard Educational Institute this summer to work on the use of data at our administrators' leadership retreat this summer. We also went back and looked at how we're going to use data. And it's again, no additional personnel, but Once our administrators, supervisors, and teachers have a better understanding of how we can use data to drive decisions, we should get better instructional decisions, and as a result, so should see higher student achievement.
Elizabeth, did you say the October 13th SAT test? Is that just for?
That's PSAT.
Okay.
The SAT, as of the meeting, hadn't been set yet. They were waiting to hear back from the College Board.
And to follow on that, will that be for Homedale students only, or at least Homedale residents will have, they will have a guaranteed spot type thing? It sounds like we're not going to have the same problems they had during COVID, where people were driving to Virginia, Atlantic City, and all over. But obviously, that's a concern if you're a junior or seniors that are still taking the test. That, you know, hopefully we're going to make sure that, you know, it's for our kids only.
I actually don't know. I'm going to have to find out or ask another person. But I don't know. The PSAT is in for juniors. I'm not sure. We'll have to see who would know that.
If I could jump in. As you just said, we're not anticipating the same problems we had last year because the sites are open and we have much more capacity than we have had in the past. I've not heard any concerns about students registering and not being able to be tested here at Homedale, but I'll check, and if there's an issue, we'll follow up on it. But I do not believe there is at this time.
Is the PSAT for junior only or for sophomore students too, the 10th grade?
PSAT for sophomores?
PSAT.
The PSAT, it's for sophomores.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the question, right?
Yeah.
That's a question.
Yes.
Yeah, Joe.
The juniors are taking it, though.
Yeah,
Juniors are taking it.
Yeah.
They said
it's for both.
Right.
Yeah.
So the sophomore and juniors are taking the PSATs?
Yeah.
They say yes.
I am. Just one question. I'm going to bring it up now versus new old business. There was a course called graphic design that is almost like an arts course, but doesn't count towards the arts requirement. I think last year I asked about this to see if it would be counted towards that, but I never got an update on that. So I just wondered if you guys could look into that in the next CNI meeting.
I could add it to the agenda for next time.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Any other questions? Okay. Eileen, you're up.
Yes. Budget and Finance met on September 22nd at 5 p.m. So regarding the referendum for the interior and exterior of Indian Hill Village, SATs and the high school, as well as the CCTV and PA system, Spiesel Architects is in review of all documents received by the contractor. At this point, all punch list items have been completed, and if any additional items emerge, they will be handled as warranty items. As you may have seen, as you walked in, the high school commons floor is complete. The high school commons bathroom is complete. They look awesome. The SATS cafeteria project is complete, as well as the SATS innovation lab. So those are four major projects that got done before school started, and they look amazing. So we're really happy to see that. Indian Hill HVAC controls, the scope assessment is complete. New cabling is installed, and the controllers and sensors are awaiting delivery. Big topic, transportation. We received an update regarding all public school, vocational school, and the non-public school transportations. And despite the national and state transportation crisis due to a lack of drivers, the start of school went fairly well. The transportation department is actively working with the transportation contractors to resolve any of the student drop-off and pickup time issues and any other matters accordingly. However, it's important to note that during this state and national transportation crisis, it is imperative that the district transportation contractors and the parent and school community continue to work together to ensure our students continue to receive transportation throughout the year. We discussed the grant award, the American Rescue Plan, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. The committee reviewed the basic and preschool grant awards, and they are included in tonight's agenda. Last thing we talked about was the 2020 and 2021 comprehensive annual financial report of the CAFRA. The auditors will begin performing their field work in October, and the committee will receive an update regarding the status at our October meeting. The next meeting is scheduled for October 20th at 5 p.m.
Thank you, Eileen. Any questions? Seeing none, I will go to Pete, right? Or Joe?
I'll go just because it's very similar to budget and finance. Buildings, grounds, and safety met also on September 23rd at 5 p.m. Thanks to Eileen. Basically, we had almost a duplicate agenda from the referendum projects, which were basically done outside of warranty items, which is outstanding, $40 million and basically done. So kudos to that. Kudos to the nice floor out front. Thankfully, these projects got done on time because we have the high school kids in five different areas for lunch. So it's critical that these things were done before school started. So kudos to Mr. Petrizzo and his whole crew and staff of getting that accomplished. The transportation service update, the only thing I'll say on that is the district has 100 plus bus routes. So as much as the bus drivers and bus companies need to have respect toward our students, it goes the other way as well. The parents and children need to have respect to those bus drivers. Since there is a national shortage on buses, if these bus drivers decide to quit or take a walk, we're gonna have kids without buses. So for the 35 or so parents that are on, actually the 55 or so parents that are listening, spread the word, be kind to your bus drivers. They're doing a very hard job right now and they're very sought after. So there's that. Reopening plan, the committee reviewed all the measures the district implemented for the start of the 2022 school year, which was consistent with the end of last year. And to date, everything's been going quite well. Obviously, it's continual discussions on what we can do and how we can continue to make the school stay healthy, essentially. The last item was the Homedale High School 50th anniversary, as Dr. Seitz and Ms. Flynn talked about before. That starts this Friday with, I guess, the football game against Jackson. And then continuing on to Saturday and then to, did you say Sunday as well?
Sunday too, yes.
Wow, you guys have
a weekend event.
A big gala. But I know on Saturday, the walkthrough that was originally scheduled, but the Hurricane Ida got it postponed, that's going to be rescheduled for 1:30 on this Saturday. I guess meeting in the high school or over in SATS? Meeting in the high school area. So if you want to come and see the $40 million worth of work that has been done primarily within the SATS High School complex, come on down on Saturday and you'll get a tour of all the beautiful things from the TV studio to the engineering lab to the gym and all the other projects that were done.
And the bathrooms too.
And the bathrooms as well, the common bathrooms that were 30 years old. Next meeting is October 21st at 5 p.m.
Thank you, Pete. Any questions? Seeing none, Joe, do you have a report?
Yep. It was nice to have a mirror in the men's bathroom in there. The Community Relations Committee met on Friday, the 23rd at noon. We discussed the 21-22 communications plan, reviewed the various different types of communications for each of the four schools by the administration. And Dr. Seitz noted that they're going to be adding some additional objectives to that plan, which they, I think, have done since this minutes went out. The second item we discussed was email notifications to the student and parents, creating multiple links. What we mean by this is that oftentimes we get emails coming from the high school or some of the other schools, and you actually get the email and you have to click into it and then go into a Google Doc or something like that. And what we recommended last year and was implemented, but then went back to what it is this year, is having the emails actually have information in it. And then if there's additional information that they need, they could then click into that as necessary. So it's trying to make it as easy as possible for parents, students to get the information, similar to what Mr. Logren sends out in his thing. So the CR committee recommended that the administration make it as easy as possible for students and parents to get updates by eliminating links as much as possible, so they could just see the information in the emails versus clicking on multiple links. And Dr. Seitz is going to check with the principals to make sure that this practice is implemented. The 50th anniversary program, as we noted, is starting this coming weekend. We reviewed the events from the Friday night football game through the end of Sunday. And Mike Sacco recommended some language changes to it, and the committee also recommended that we get the word out on the celebration via the press releases and school messengers. And I've seen it in the patch and in some other tap into and some other different publications online. So they are getting the word out on the event, and hopefully we'll see a lot of people at the games and at the events over the weekend. The fourth item was fall public relations needs. The committee discussed the following press releases. Press releases around, for Indian Hill principal and the director of special services, releases around the superintendent search. We also discussed the following items in terms of back to school nights, highlighting that they were not virtual, and glad that we were all in person for the back to school nights, which was great to see. We also discussed the plastic sealed shields that some of the committee noted that the plastic shields in the desks, on the desks for some of the students, were hard to see out of and questioned the need for them. Dr. Seitz said he was evaluating the need for them and may make them optional. We would need to prepare a school message for the administration to speak to if the changes are made, but those changes will be made based on the rates of COVID infection and what Dr. Seitz evaluates as a recommendation back to the board. Photos on the website need to be updated. More diverse photos across multiple clubs, sports, academics, arts, and activities were recommended. We discussed the internship program and doing some PR on that. The Board of Ed presentation survey results for September or October are recommended. And survey results for the or survey options for the Board of Ed as well, we discussed. And last but not least, the cultural initiative committee, who recommended that meeting with Jeff, Alicia, Mike, and Elizabeth and Linda happen so that we can kind of get the word out on that as well. And that's the end of my report.
Thanks, Joe. Any questions?
Thank you about following up on the links, Joe.
Yes.
I love that you followed up on the links.
We implemented last year and then it kind of came back. So I think it's just people coming.
Yeah, because I can't get it on my phone sometimes when they come through a link. So I appreciate that follow up and the pictures too. That's good. Yes.
I'm not sure which committee it is, but do we know if the band's coming on Friday? Obviously, it's our last home game. So if anyone knows that, I think it'd be cool to have the band there on the 50th anniversary.
The Pep Band will be there this Friday.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you.
I had a question about the plexiglass. During class time where it's really interactive or discussion-based, the plexiglass makes it sort of difficult to do that. I was wondering if there's guidelines, like, for example, in a science class, if you're doing a lab, would it be okay to remove the plexiglass? And of course, obviously, we might have to wait for the evaluation, but are there any answers you have on that for now?
Yes, we're discussing. Go ahead, Dr. Seitz. It's a big discussion, the plexiglass right now.
Yeah, it is a big issue because, and believe it or not, it varies from building to building and age level because of the availability of vaccines for the secondary group. So we're looking at it. We'll probably make a decision next week at each of the four levels. Obviously, SATs and the high school are probably going to be a little easier to reach a decision on. And as I said earlier, because there's no direct contact for students, that's very helpful. I am concerned about direct contact for teachers and how that might affect them. At the elementary level, there are some issues that we're trying to address. I met with the principals this morning to continue our discussion on the use of plexiglass, the elementary principals, on the use of the plexiglass shields. And the biggest issue there is that we have more COVID quarantines down there than we do at the secondary level. Secondly, we have full classes, and therefore the teacher has a greater chance of being having direct exposure to someone who may have COVID-19. And as always, the most challenging aspect is the lunch period for elementary students where they have to remove their masks to eat. So that's the biggest problem we're trying to resolve right now, because they do it in their classrooms. We do that to limit exposure to the students in that classroom, as opposed to multiple classrooms of students being exposed if someone has COVID-19. But we are working on it. Again, I do expect to have some announcement next week, and hopefully we can make it easier for students and across the board. While you mentioned the problem at the high school, with the way we group our elementary students, where they may be in a pod of four students facing each other and then trying to see the board, it creates a bit of a problem. So in the short term, we're asking teachers to look at that, if they can adjust the seating when the board is being used, so that students only have to look through one plexiglass shield and not two or more. But again, I'm hopeful that with a little more study and a little more ingenuity, we can make some adjustments as early as next week.
Can you also look at to see what other schools are using the plexiglass now, since we have implemented the mask mandate? Because I've been hearing some rumblings that there's not that many school districts using the plexiglass right now because of the issues that you've raised, Dr. Seitz, and Ramon, you too, that you've raised. That's why it's the big topic of discussion right now.
We certainly want to do that.
Can you ask your colleagues?
Yeah, well, we'll do a survey of school districts in the area, which is fine. It's a good indicator of what they're doing. Again, I think my concern is that the elementary students and our teachers have the greatest chance of being exposed, and that creates a problem for us. But again, we're monitoring it. I spoke to a group of parents last week and said I wanted to see what this week's numbers look like, the COVID numbers, and I said we posted them today. They're really quite positive in that we have limited cases in the district. We do have some students in quarantine. I don't believe, if I recall correctly, we don't have any teachers in quarantine right now, which is positive, but yeah, we'll work on it.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, this is a good time. No other questions from the board? Questions or comments on the action items only? So those are on the items that we're going to vote upon. Is that okay? You want to talk now? You could talk now. It's fine. You have to come to the microphone, please, sir. State your name and address.
Hello, my name is Ari Asani, and I just have a question. Can anyone care to explain to me as to why we have plexiglass when we have a mandate that every child must wear a mask? Anyone explain that to me, please?
Well, I think Dr. Seitz just did, but he could explain it again.
What's the effectiveness of that? What difference does it make of having plexiglass and a mask on top? Mind you, that the kids can't touch each other either. Does that make sense? Or?
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
So then we're wasting money on stuff we don't need, correct?
Well, let's begin by the fact that in the road, the path forward, the state indicates on page 7 that if you cannot maintain social distancing, then you should have a structural barrier. And that's what a plexiglass shield is.
Okay.
As I mentioned earlier, while there is no direct contact for students, it still doesn't mean they can't get it and can't spread it. But more importantly, or just as importantly, I shouldn't say more, but just as importantly, there is direct contact for teachers. So if a teacher is in a class with a student who has COVID and meets the direct contact guidelines, then that teacher will have to be quarantined for anywhere from, I think it's 10 to 14, 7 to 10 days or 7 to 14 days. I'd have to look at the quarantine guidelines to be 100% accurate. But I believe it's 7 days with a negative test, 10 days without it. So that's the reason we're doing it.
So the issue is that the kids are not, or the kids are between 6 feet. So then I have another thing. So then how come sports are allowed also?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that and speak to the microphone?
The whole issue you just said is that the reason we have this plexiglass and we're wasting money on this is because the children are not allowed to, are not 6 feet apart, and that can cause other people to get COVID, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so then why we have kids playing sports right now?
Why do we have what?
Kids playing sports. I just went attended a soccer game. I saw football down there. I'm pretty sure they're all well within 6 feet of each other. And no, not a mask in sight, might I add.
Again, the one thing that you will
is that not, are they not children or are they not part of the school?
They're outdoor activities.
And that has, what does that have to do with anything? It being outdoor, indoor, you could still get it. It's still in the air, correct?
Yeah, there's a difference in outdoor activities and the indoor activities.
All right, so let's see. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. 11. 11 people inside without a mask.
It's
and
so,
so we could be in here without masks, but my sister, who's been having headaches for the past week, might or maybe more than that.
And then you should put on your mask on.
We hear you. These are debates that we're continuing to have amongst the board, and
there's no change that's ever been seen.
We hear. Yet. Thank you for your comments. We really appreciate them. They there's issues that we continue to discuss as a board. As far as you know, I do have to object to you saying that we wasted money on the plexiglass because that's what we were required to do last year. Okay. Excuse me, sir.
Sorry.
That's what we were required to do last year to be one of the first school districts in this state to open full time, okay? Because we didn't do the spacing requirements. And that's what the guidance document from our the state provided to us. So that's why we have plexiglass. We already paid for them. We're not wasting money on them. We continue to evaluate the guidelines that are given to us. If you attended one of our board meetings a few weeks ago when we talked about this, I appreciate your opinion. I appreciate everyone's opinions on this. I've talked to many parents about this. We had people come and speak at length. However, Governor Murphy has decided that your opinion doesn't matter. My opinion doesn't matter. These people's opinions doesn't matter.
So we can't make a change on that?
And well, there's an election in November. That's one way you can make a change.
Election.
Sir, that I mean, we could have these debates, but that's, we are a school district in which we have been told, and I don't know if you're aware, but the state threatened to sue another district that decided to throw away and try to ignore the mandates. So that's something.
I could name numerous things that people have, for example, in New York, there have been gyms that in the peak of COVID had stayed open whilst being accused of, or they were in the process of being sued, but they still followed through with being open. Why can't we be the ones that take the first step or show the rest of the people that, you know what, we're standing up for our kids, my sister, other people's children. Why can't we be that?
So I'm sure you're aware that I have reached out to Governor Murphy's office numerous times on this topic, and he doesn't get back to me. Yeah, well, that's how the state constitution is set up. This is how this works in this state.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Department of Education that establishes guidelines. And by the way, the governor has said he's not going to adhere to that. He's going to make those decisions. So that's what we're operating under right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comments. I appreciate them. Any questions or comments from the public on action items only?
I'm Kimberly Tosillo, 21 Huntley Road. I just have a question. I see that the supervisor of humanities is being promoted to principal, and which is, you know, fantastic. But my question is actually her salary, in regards to her salary and where that number comes from in regards to, you know, we have other principals that have been in this district for much longer, you know, as an acting principal and are making just as much. So I guess my question, you know, and previously we've also hired vice principals recently at a much higher salary than what a starting VP had made in this district. So I'm just curious as to your decision making. I know that the administration is working without a contract. Is that something within their contract and something that's negotiated? Because I've never, you know, seen their contract.
At the site.
the current administrators are working without a contract, and when their contract is settled, they will be getting a raise based on that contract, assuming there's a raise negotiated within the contract. The people we are hiring most recently are based on what the job market mandates. We had a candidate that we offered a job to last week who turned it down at $145,000. So if you want quality people, you have to pay what the market demands. In regard to the people who were here, that's a reflection of the negotiated contracts between the administrators and the Board of Education that have been agreed to over the years. You know, I can't speak with great clarity because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it appears that within the contracts that have been approved over the years, that administrators receive a percent increase based on their salary at when they were hired. So that's where the discrepancy comes in. But when you're hiring people in this job market and this community expects high quality people, you have to pay the going rate. And we have been paying the going rate. And as I said, we offered a person position last week at $145,000, and that position was turned down. So they wanted about $10,000 more, which I didn't think was appropriate. And I didn't think the market supported that kind of salary, nor the candidate's background supported that kind of salary.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Jill Perez, Six Sweet Briar Lane. I just wanted to say thank you because you're very brave to come up here and speak on behalf of your family and your sister. I hear the frustration because every school district is doing things so differently. And I think that's part of the frustration. My oldest goes to communications, and I'm so thrilled that Homedale is actually allowing kids to have a real gym class. And you were speaking to that because it is indoor gym class. And so my understanding from my two children that are here is that they're able to participate in gym without a mask on. And I'm thrilled. Now, my older daughter in high school is running on a treadmill, masked, and she's breaking out. Okay, now, of course, she's not going to complain. But as a parent, you know, we see all these things. And yes, masks, that lack of oxygen will lead to headaches. So the question is, why is everything so different from district to district? And I was just observing a student teacher today. I was in Union County in an old school building in a first grade classroom. There's no plexiglass. And the kids, they're in their own seats, right? Very close to one another. And then they go to do group work at another table. But then they do go outside, because when I first got there, they were outside and they were masked. So it's just really frustrating to understand what we're trying to accomplish, okay? Because, you know, myself, I go in and I am very privileged to be in so many different schools in the state, and I do see how everyone is doing them differently. And it's great to see that, you know, some are maybe creating a more human experience for our students, and then others, I kind of feel like I don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing because I have to keep my distance. But at the end of the day, they're children. You know, so today in that first grade classroom, I tied three sets of shoes because I didn't want them to trip as they were getting ready. So, you know, I'm never going to fear a child. And I know I've spoken to this. I've been teaching for 20 years. In my first year, I did get chicken pox. So I know I got that from a student, okay? But I'm okay. And I'm not trying to downplay anything, but what are we, you know, we have these young kids and they're so impressionable. I'm just curious to know what's going to happen in a couple of years, right? Social emotional learning. What's the outcome here? So all I know is that siblings, parents, we all just want what's best for our kids. And I think we are getting tired of this protocol that doesn't make a lot of sense because everywhere we go, it's different. Even within the same county. So I wanted to speak to that. But then I did also have a question about curriculum. So that was originally what I wanted to come up for, but I definitely wanted to address that because, of course, it's on my mind. I have four children. And my youngest is in kindergarten, and I'm not sending her here because I don't want to mask my kindergarten because she's going to be so obedient. And that's why I'm conflicted as a parent. So anyway, I want my kids to obey authority. But sometimes I question, right, what we are obeying. So, you know, if my fifth grader needs to breathe for a moment, I know she's going to do what she needs to do. My kindergartner is not going to. And that is very concerning. But going back to the different tests, too, because my understanding is Linkit is new this year in Homedale. Has it been used before in Homedale? I mean, I know it's not new. I'm just curious.
It was used last year.
It was used last year. Okay. So is Homedale using MAPS, Linkit, and iReady?
Yes, we are. They're two different programs, but go ahead.
So I'm just curious to know what, you know, and again, I'm not here to be critical. I'm really not. You know, I'm just questioning things. And I've had, you know, the privilege of seeing, you know, all these different tests. And I'm not a huge fan of actually spending lots of money on tests. I don't, you know, I'm sure some are necessary, but some aren't. So I'm just curious to know the cost of all those tests and if they really are demonstrating or helping our students, right? I know they're capturing data, but is it helpful to have all of that? And what is the cost, both financially and maybe in terms of, like, you know, mentally for the kids?
You know, just cost off the top.
Can I just add something before you speak?
Yeah.
I really recommend that you go back and read all of my curriculum and instruction minutes because I've spoken about all of these tests and everything about them. And in every meeting, I'm very, very, very careful to include all the information that is discussed in the curriculum and instruction meeting. We discussed Linkit and its benefits. We've discussed iReady. We discussed MAP and what grades are used in and everything. And it's all there in public. And so you can look online and find out all of that information.
Right, but maybe do we need all those tools? In many districts, it's
if you read the information, you'll realize that they all serve a different purpose. They're for different grades. And some are like a Linkit could be something that could be made per grade for a unit test, as opposed to MAP, which would be an overall assessment. MAP is for the lower grades. Linkit started in SATs, and now we're introducing it to Indian Hill. So it's more of a holistic approach that we're growing with it as we teach the teachers how to use it. So I really recommend that you look at what we went through last year, making these decisions and understanding what grades, what tests are for, because not every grade is taking every single test.
Okay. Well, thank you for clarifying that.
Dr. Seitz, you have anything to add?
Sure.
No.
Well, first of all, I believe very strongly that the more data we have on our students' performance, the better we can teach them, the more targeted the instruction can be, and therefore we should have higher student achievement. And we do not have an excessive amount of testing, because the Linkit tests are given three times a year and are really not burdensome. But it does provide the teacher with tools that he or she needs to provide better instruction, and that's what we're here for. I think you're going to see database decision-making expanding dramatically because of tools like Linkit, MAPS. And again, they're different. You realize they're different grade bands. One group, elementary, gets MAPS, secondary gets Linkit. We don't do Linkit K-12, we don't do MAPS K-12. So there is no overlap there where there's no duplication. I think that's important to know. But formative assessments that they're called are vital to success of our students. And again, there's not an excessive burden on the students, it really isn't. But it does provide valuable data to the classroom teacher so he or she can make changes. He or she can identify students who have grasped the learning that was to take place, identify those students who have not, and provide more instruction or remedial approaches so that student does catch up. Because the worst thing, and anybody who's taken math knows that if you don't grasp each concept as it's being taught, when you get to the more advanced grade levels, you have gaps or holes in your understanding, and you're less successful than you should be. So that's the purpose of this testing. It's not burdensome, and it's not overlapping. So I think it's highly appropriate.
Okay. I mean, for myself, I'm collecting data because I am questioning it. You know, having been in the field for 2 decades, when I first entered the field, there was really just standardized testing for fourth grade and middle eighth grade and then high school. And then, you know, we added the third grade and then every year. But quite honestly, when you look at the United States performance, it's actually gone down. And when you look at countries like Finland, which is consistently at the top, they do a lot less testing. So I'm just curious, and I'm not saying that it's not important to collect data, but I am saying that we have 20 years of looking at all this, and I am curious to know, is it really working? Because what has happened is schools have definitely spent more money on testing. You know, when we were in testing fourth, eighth, and high school, we weren't spending as much on those tests, right? We were spending it maybe in more teachers or in other resources. So it has become a more significant part of the budget to have all those tests. And I just think it's, you know, valid to look at. So I wanted to share that point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Vicki, could I make a quick comment?
I think there's someone who wants to speak. So
it was really, I wanted a clarification.
What do you want a clarification? Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. So just to make sure that we're all talking apples and oranges, we're not talking apples and oranges. Lee, when you talk about testing, you're talking about testing of students to measure their performance on a grade by grade level across holistic subjects like English or math. What Jill is talking about is, and I only say this because she's referencing global testing. She's talking about testing that's more like standardized testing, which is really to measure how kids are doing in a particular grade, in a particular subject. I just wanted to make sure that they're both different things, or are they both the same? Because I always thought the two things were different.
Mike, you are correct. You know, when we talk about MAPS and we talk about Linkit and iReady to a degree, we're talking about what's called a formative test, which is to inform the teacher as to what the student has an understanding of and what the student does not understand. And that way we can inform instruction. The summary tests really haven't really changed. Summary test is like the final exam the student gets, or a unit test that the student gets, and they are part of the ongoing assessment program in the school district. As I said, I do believe testing is highly appropriate. I do, unfortunately, know that when I entered the profession, there wasn't any testing. It was a test generated by a teacher. And some tests were good and some were not, and really didn't inform us as to what the student knew or did not know. Today, we have the tools, and we've been working hard in the field of education to develop these tools so that teachers can understand what is going on in the classroom, can understand the outcome of their instruction. And I think we have to recognize when we talk about the quality of schools, and you talk about the state of schools in the United States of America versus a country like Finland, they're completely different. Completely different systems, completely different plans, completely different student populations that they're working with. There is no comparison. Simply, it doesn't work. And when you look at the United States and their performance, we all know we have some major urban centers throughout the country where students simply don't perform as high as they should. We have a significant dropout rate across the country, which affects student performance when you compare us to schools throughout the world. So do we rank up with Finland? No, we don't. Two completely different systems. And if you go there, or if you study their system or take a look at it, you'll see they're very different systems. And I don't think that's a true measure of what we should apply to the Homedale schools. What I see in Homedale is a high-performing district that should and will be higher, will be forming at a higher level in the years to come because of the formative assessment programs that we put in place. One of our biggest gaps between some of the top five schools in the state and where we are, which is 19th on one of our studies, is students who take the AP exams. Now, we're trying to address that, and we're trying to encourage students to take the AP exam to complete the AP experience, which includes the AP exam. That's a wonderful measure of how our instructional program compares to instructional programs across the country and how our students perform compared to students across the country. It's a common curriculum. It's a common assessment. So we are hurt in these rankings by the fact that we have a number of students who, for a variety of reasons, elect not to take AP exams. What have we done to address that? Well, we're encouraging students to take the AP exam. The district is paying for the exams that our students take, which can be a significant burden on a family. So we're trying to eliminate that. And once we get more students taking the exams, we'll have a better understanding of how our students are doing in that particular area. Now, that's a very specific group of students, but that is a perfect example of how the assessment program helps us improve instruction. It also is a perfect example of how you have to be careful when you look at rankings and what drives those rankings. A lot of times it's not what you would think. It's not because a school district has the highest scores in the state. One is participation in the AP exams. Now, how is that an indicator of student success? But yet, in some of the studies that you are probably referring to, that's a significant factor. So when you look at Homedale, I would say, you know, look at where we are and look at where we are 3 years from now, because continuous growth is what we're looking for. And when you are as high performing as Homedale is, your incremental growth is really limited from year to year because the scores are so high to begin with. I've been in districts where students have been struggling, and we were able to get tremendous growth over a 1, 2, and 3 year period. Well, that's because they were struggling as a district. Here, your students are doing extraordinarily well. They're going to, great colleges, and they're being very successful. But again, be careful when you look at studies and really look at the factors that they're including and look at where we may not have a score as high as the top three in the state of New Jersey, but that's what we're looking at. And we're looking at where we rank with those three schools, three school districts, and where the gaps are and what we can do to fill them if we want to fill them. The one that I just explained, the AP exams, it's a simple one to look at. It's easy to define. And we are trying to encourage our students to take those exams for their benefit as well as ours. Is an AP exam stressful? Absolutely. When you get to these tier one colleges, is testing stressful? Absolutely. This provides our students with the experience and the background so when they get to college, they can be successful and be successful in their career of choice. So be careful when you look at exams. We're not Finland. The United States will never be Finland, and that's just reality.
Okay. Anything else? Any other questions or comments from the public on action items only? Those are resolutions that we're about to adopt. There's a point at the end of the meeting where you could talk about other things other than the resolutions that we're going to adopt tonight.
Hi.
Okay, go ahead, Christy.
Hi, I'm Christy O'Connor, 10 Spring Valley Drive. I am going to go back to the plexiglass one last time. Dr. Seitz, can you cite any studies that prove that plexiglass is effective in a classroom?
No, I don't have that information in front of me. But again, I go back to, and this is what's so challenging in dealing with the state guidelines. The one thing we know is that they're inconsistent. I'll give you an example. Last year, you may recall that we felt, because of the level of COVID in our school district and the steps we had taken to address the safety and welfare and health of our students and staff, that we made the mask optional for the last week or two of school. We did that because of the reasons I just told you. And in June, I really thought we would be coming back in September in a normal mask optional environment. The state came out with guidelines, and we are obligated to follow those guidelines. And the one, of course, is the mask. The other is a structural barrier. Now, you know, we can spend time researching it, and we may find research that says they're not effective. But when the state makes a directive, an executive order, we have to follow it. And sometimes they're contradictory. You know, we know that we have students in close contact in the interscholastic sports program. It's inconsistent with what we do in the classroom. But that's the guidelines provided to us by the state. So, no, I don't have any research in front of me. I'm sure there's research out there and probably goes both ways. Some support it, some do not. But we have an obligation. And my responsibility is to ensure the health, safety, and welfare of our students and our staff. And that affects, you know, 3,000 students and a couple of hundred, 300 staff members. So I have to be on the side of caution. You know, someone might say, well, I don't think my child should wear a mask. And that's fine. But I don't have that luxury because I have to apply it to all students and all staff members. And I just have to reflect on, what do you think it would look like if I had to close Village School because an outbreak of COVID and we didn't have enough teachers and we had to have so many students quarantined? What do you think that would look like and how that community would accept, how our home dad would accept that? It would not go well. And I have to be able to justify that. And I've always said to people, when I make a decision, it's really, you know, looking out for the health, safety, and welfare of our students and staff. And I have to be able to stand up in public and defend it. And COVID had put a little wrinkle in there saying, I not only have to defend it, but now I have to follow the rules and regulations of the governor through his executive orders, not through state law, but through what the governor mandates. And I think that's what Mrs. Flynn was referring to earlier. These are the governor's directives, so we're following them. I also said earlier, and maybe I wasn't clear, but let me repeat it, we are monitoring this almost on a daily basis. And if I think we have an environment that has proven to be effective and that we don't need the shields, then I'll be more than happy to make the shields optional, maybe even eliminate them. And again, we're looking hard at that at the complex for a variety of reasons. As I said earlier, the elementary is a little more challenging because we have students in close proximity eating without their masks. So in that particular segment of the day, the lunch period, the plexiglass shields are very effective in that they prevent direct airflow to the students. It contains it. It contains the coughs and sneezes and so forth. So that's what we're trying to resolve at this point. If we get to a point where it's safe for a segment of the population, then we'll change the restrictions on plexiglass. But we're not there yet. We may be there in a week. We may be there in a month. I just don't know at this point. But we've been in school for about 3.5 weeks now. The COVID numbers are solid. They're better this week than last week. And if that trend continues, that'll be a big factor in what we do.
I don't think the executive order includes a structural barrier. I do understand everything you're saying about you know, the children eating in the classroom. I understand all that. But if you sit at one of those desks and the plexiglass is in front of you and a couple inches on the side, where's the science proving that COVID is not escaping around those barriers? It's ridiculous. And so, you know, you mentioned the welfare, the health and welfare of our children. We are so worried about, you know, following quarantine protocols.
We have to look at the whole child. You are a well-respected man with a lot of experience in education. I know people in this town are very happy with what you've done and with what this board has done. We were one of the first schools to be open full-time and like, can you hear me? Okay.
Thank you.
Where was I? I know every family in town has appreciated all that you have done and the board has done and the faculty and the staff. But if we're going to talk about the welfare of these children, we have to think of the whole picture. And a plexiglass shield that is completely ineffective, unless someone can show us a study that shows they're effective, or case spread in schools with shields versus case spread schools without shields. There are things that you have the power to change, and this is one of them. So I ask that you really consider this.
Thank you.
If I could, I agree with you. We are looking very closely at this, and we're looking at the regulations. And I can tell you on page 7 of the path forward, which is something we sent to all the parents weeks ago, it says very, very clearly structural barriers when you can't maintain social distancing. So I understand what you're saying. And just like last June, when we got to a point where I felt it was safe for students and staff, we went mask optional. I think probably the only district in the state that did that. So I'm not opposed to taking those risks. There were others that went without masks?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I didn't know that. I'm focused on Homedale most of the time, and it's a full-time job. But again, when we can be confident that it's safe, we will do it. And again, I have been in those classrooms when the issue of plexiglass was raised last week, I think it was. I went into the classrooms. And I looked at the arrangements that the teachers have in terms of pods for students. And I got down, and it was a kindergarten classroom, so it was difficult for me to get back up. But I got down so I could see where the kids were at eye level and see what they were looking at. And it does cause a problem that we have to resolve. But it goes back to, and I understand your concern about the social and emotional welfare of students. What is the impact of the plexiglass? What's the impact of the mask? I understand that, and I accept all that. I also have to look at the negative. What's the impact if we have to quarantine 30, 40, 50, 100 students at Village? And that's a real possibility. What if it jumps to 200, 300? What's the social, the rhetorical questions? What are the social, emotional impact of that? Now, last year, there was a strong input from the parents that they wanted their children in school. And you know, we did that to the degree we could. It was a phased-in process. We went with the hybrid. You know, in the spring of 20, we went full virtual. In the 2021 school year, we started September with a hybrid. Kids coming in every other day. And as we went through the school year and we saw successes, right after Thanksgiving, we had to close for 2 weeks because we had a spike in COVID. And then December 16th, we opened the elementary schools to full time. A little bit after that, when we solved the lunch situation at the complex, we opened that to full time. And then in the end, we tried the mask optional. So it's a process. And, you know, we may not have this discussion a month from now. We may not need this discussion 2 or 3 weeks from now. But as of today, I'm just not in a position. And trust me, I'd love to, because I agree with you. I think if our kids are in school with less restrictions, less guidelines that they have to follow, I think it'll be better for everyone. But there's also the downside, and that's if we have to send kids home and they're quarantined for an extended period of time, because we all agreed, and we all agree, that virtual is not the same as in person. So that's where we are. And again, trust me, if I felt comfortable enough to get rid of the plexiglass shields tomorrow, I would. I'm just not quite there yet, but I'm getting closer.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions online? Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Sureka Kolor, 43 Windswept Road. I'm not exactly sure if my question is an action item, so I was hesitating, but I thought I'd come up and down a couple of times. I might as well ask it now. First, I applaud the school for making it a priority to keep the school open as number one. And there are various opinions on masks and plexiglass, and you can keep considering them. But as you rightly said, keeping the school open is the first priority. This question I have is about staff positions, filling staff positions. And I see that you're filling quite a few staff positions. That's good. But twofold, particularly the position of superintendent of schools, which has been ably, you know, conducted by Dr. Leeds. But
you're really speaking to the mic and raise your volume a little bit. I'm having trouble hearing.
All right. Can you hear me?
A little louder.
Back up. All right. All right. So my question is about filling the vacant positions in school and the school system. I see some of them are being filled, and that's good. But particularly the position of the superintendent of schools, which is, you know, being ably filled by Dr. Leeds. However, it has been an interim position for a couple of years. So I'd like to know what measures are being taken to make it permanent and what obstacles we're encountering. And additionally, if there are some positions that are being filled today, but are there other open positions that are still unfilled, and what are we doing about them?
Thank you for your question. We actually met before in executive session to discuss retaining the services of a search firm to conduct a search for the superintendent, because Dr. Seitz has been here just a little over a year. And generally, like once you hit 2 years with interims, there's a law that requires you to get someone else in place. An interim can only serve 2 years, but there's been some flexibility due to recent circumstances. So we did conduct interviews today of search firm. Our intention is to retain the services of a search firm before our next board meeting by our next board meeting and start the process of searching for a superintendent. And then other positions that are open, if there's any positions that are open, the process is that they're posted. People submit their resumes, it's presented to HR, goes through the interview process, and at some point it will be a hidden agenda when a recommendation is ready to be made by the superintendent for those open positions.
All right. So I guess because of COVID, you couldn't proceed quickly with those processes, but now we could expect them to be done sooner. And
we're doing the best we can, yeah. It's been a challenge for a lot of school districts, as I understand it, even with like substitutes, the bus drivers. It's a very challenging time for a lot of school districts, but you know, we're doing the best we can and we'll continue to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other on the action items only?
And then on, hey Pete or Joe, can you see? Is there any on the screen?
Okay, thank you so much. At this point, we're gonna move to the action items. I take a motion for items number 1 through 17, 20 to 79.
Motion.
Second.
Second. Discussion? Seeing none, have a roll call, please.
Ms. Flynn.
Yes.
Mr. Sokol.
Abstain on items 1 and 2. Yes for everything else.
Mr. Reddy.
Yes.
Mrs. Bumonte.
Yes.
Mr. Wall.
Yes. Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Hammer?
Yes.
Mrs. Urbanski?
Yes.
Mrs. Zhang?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Item number 18, resolve that the board accept with gratitude a monetary donation from Equitable Foundation not to exceed $1,000 for professional development activities at Homedale High School. Can I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? Seeing none, cover roll call, please.
Ms. Flynn?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Sockel?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Reddy?
Yes, thanks.
Mrs. Bramante?
Thank you, yes.
Mr. Wall?
Yes, thank you very much.
Mr. Foster?
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Mr.
Yes, thank you.
Mrs. Urbanski?
Yes, thank you.
Mrs. Zhang?
Yeah, thank you for the donation.
Yeah.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 19, resolve that the board accept with gratitude a monetary donation from the HYAA for an amount not to exceed $1,982 to be designated for the Homedale High School Athletic Activity Fund. May I have a motion?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion?
Do we know any idea why what it's for? I mean, Joe and I were just saying it's a very non-round number. I mean, I'm obviously very appreciative, but $1,982, it's like...
Nothing was articulated in our meeting.
Bye.
Does anyone know?
We will get back to you, Pete and Joe and the rest of the board.
But we know that they're such good partners, and they do nothing but good for us, so we appreciate it. Can I have a roll call, please? Yes, thank you, HYAA.
Yes.
Mr. Sockel?
Yes.
Mr. Reddy?
Yes, much appreciated.
Mrs. Bramante?
Yes, thank you so much.
Mr. Wall?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Foster?
Yes, thank you, guys.
Mr. Hammer?
Yes, thank you very much.
Mrs. Urbanski?
Yes, thank you.
Mrs. Zhang?
Yeah, thank you, HYA.
Motion passes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. This is for our high school, our graduating, our alumni tonight. Resolution number 80, approval of dedication of service road to Dr. White, to rename it Dr. White Lane. Whereas Dr. Richard H. White served with distinction as principal of the William R. Satt School from 1967 through 1970, and as the first principal of Homedale High School from 1970 through 1994. And whereas during his distinguished career, Dr. White was a beloved and tireless advocate for the educational and emotional well-being of Homedale students and set a firm foundation for Homedale School's standard of academic excellence. And whereas the Homedale Board of Education desires to honor Dr. White's exemplary service in the district by naming a district roadway after him, now therefore be it resolved that the Homedale Board of Education dedicates the service road in front of Homedale High School and Satz Middle School as Dr. White Lane and directs its administration to arrange for appropriate signage memorializing this designation, and be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution be presented to Dr. White with the board's thanks for his many years of service and his dedication to the students and staff of Homedale High School. May I have a motion?
Move.
Second.
Discussion?
I'm not an alumni, but for the alumni out there, I think this is super cool. Obviously, my wife was a Homedale alum, and say my brother-in-law and sister-in-law and family's been here a long time. So I don't know Dr. White, but obviously I know he was a beast in this district for 24 years, and he pretty much, you know, from all I hear is he created this district. I mean, he was here half the time the district was here. So people like Elizabeth Terrence and people in the audience, I mean, I'm sure you guys have a lot more to say than I would, but I think it's awesome.
Well, I would like to just extol the virtues of Dr. White. He got me my first start in negotiation skills when he pulled me out of the Commons bathroom. We had a discussion up in his office and it worked out successfully. So I was happy about that. And I always remember the experience of talking to a leader in the district when I was, young guy in high school, and we're all having fun and working and learning, and he was very, very much on task and with the children and helping guide you personally on a one-on-one basis, and his work is very, very much appreciated by myself and my peers who also graduated Homedale High School. Great man, and I think it's a wonderful, wonderful path to name that road. Thank you.
Thanks, Terrence, for sharing that. Any other comments? just hope I see everyone this weekend to be able to celebrate this wonderful class and give Dr. White his due signage. It will be a really nice event. Okay. Roll call. Yes, enthusiastically, yes.
Mr. Sokol.
Yes.
Mr. Reddy.
Yes.
Mrs. Bramante.
Yes.
Mr. Wall.
Yes.
Mr. Foster.
Yes.
Mr. Hammer.
Yes.
Mrs. Urbanski.
Yes.
Mrs. Zhang.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. I also would like to acknowledge and that we did approve a new principal for Indian Hill. Alicia, would you like to say anything? We're so happy that you're taking on this task for us. So we wish you lots of luck. I know the students at Indian Hill are very fortunate to have you, but we wanted to thank you for taking this on for us.
Thank you so much. I just want to thank the board and Dr. Seitz for giving me this wonderful opportunity. It's a privilege and an honor to serve in this district and this community, and I'm really looking forward to a wonderful and exciting year. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can I say something quickly about that? I just want to say congratulations. And when I heard about your placement, I was kind of mixed reaction because I was, of course, very happy and excited for Indian Hill, but sad that you're not going to be an English supervisor anymore because you've done such an exceptional job and really showed the way. So congratulations and good luck in your new position.
Good, Eileen. You have something?
Yeah, same. When we heard, of course, we felt so sad for the high school. They have, whoever replaces you has some big shoes to fill, but best of luck at Indian Hill.
Just if I could share, actually, at that meeting, it was actually really cool, Alicia, because a bunch of groans came up, and Dr. Seitz immediately stepped in. He said, just understand that these groans are all because of we're losing somebody in this position, but moving forward in this other role. So it was actually really cool to see that, the way that went down. So thank you very much.
Okay. Any old business board members? Any new business?
Yes, I want to discuss something. The U.S. Department of Agriculture announced in April that the free meals would be available to all students during the 2021-2022 school years. It is an extension of adjustments of the department mid the start of the pandemic to feed students across the country who are taking part in the remote learning. And this free lunch will be offered to all public school children, regardless of their family financial situations. So I want to hear the community's opinions. So whether in your home now, we should implement that or not.
Thank you, Linda. My response is like any, and this gives me a good opportunity to remind anyone out there, any parents, if you're ever dealing with any financial issues, you know, don't ever worry about school lunch. We will make sure that you're taken care of here in Homedale. We're very fortunate to have that without being part of the national lunch program. I know throughout my years as I was a member of the parent group, I know the lunch program has been a significant issue throughout the years. And even as a member of the board, our parents have demanded that we provide as many offerings, healthier offerings, enhancing our offerings to our students, which we've been able to do through Chartwell's and through the private program that we have. If we were part of the National Lunch Program, we would not be allowed to do that because they have very different standards that we'd have to comply with. So I think I know from my experience, both as a prior parent group president, dealing with parents who are very concerned about the school lunch program, and as well as in my capacity as a board member, what we're doing is working very well for our school district, but no parent should ever feel like that we cannot accommodate some type of financial situation. Their kids, no kid, and I think, correct my Patrizzo, no kid should ever be denied a lunch in our school district.
That is correct.
Yes. So even when parents like myself fail to put the money in the account, they still get lunch, thank God. And Shannon, she's fed, so that's very good. And then I just have to up it the next time. And even Mike Sockel has noted, he reminded me, I think in the past when we were part of the National Lunch Program, we suffered financial losses in doing so. That's what Mike Sockel told me, as he remembers.
Yeah, if I might offer a little perspective, you know, over the last 11 years, I've had multiple meetings with Mr. Patrizzo in discussions about our lunch program, about Chartwells, about how we have set up a system in which by using Chartwells, we maximize the options that we can give to parents. And trust me, every few years, we get a whole group of parents who come in and they want different types of options for their kids, organic choices and things of that nature. By using Chartwells, we have that option. In addition, Chartwells guarantees a certain return to the district financially because of our agreement to give them exclusivity to serve our students. And that in itself has turned around a program that at one time was a loss leader and a program that a lot of people were not happy about the food into a program that has general acceptance, stabilized prices for the lunch items, and the ability for the district to, be able to be subsidized by Chartwells. Examples of how that becomes valuable, and I always defer to Michael because he'll correct me if I'm wrong, but only a few years ago, we were able to use some of that money, and it was a sizable amount of money, to upgrade. It was either the oven or it was the refrigeration. I can't remember which of the two. I think it was the oven, Michael. And that was money that did not have to come from taxpayers. That was money that came from the fund that we've established that comes from Chartwells. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, as Vicki has pointed out, if you need a free lunch, the Homedale School District will provide you with a free lunch. But we don't want to sacrifice giving free lunches to students when we look at all of the incredible benefits that we have seen over the last, at least the 11 years I've been on the board. I think this is a program that predates me by a few years. Michael, did I hit all the points correctly? I always like you to double check me.
Hey, Ben, Mike. You showed some examples. There's been a lot of investments back into our kitchen, our facilities. In the commons, if you walk in, you see all those. The Hive is another example of it, but when you walk in, you see the countertops and the stools. And so there's a lot of examples of reinvesting back into the program and it being self-funded. So yeah, Michael, those are accurate statements.
And Vicki, we did say in our next Buildings and Grounds meeting, we actually plan to bring Bill Gerichter from Edward Kate and Chartwells to come to the meeting because it has been probably over a year and a half. We have not seen them since before COVID because the lunch program basically wasn't open. So it's going to be good. We wanted to give them a month or so to get a feel of how the year's going, get the lunches started, what's good, what's bad, what they're doing different, now that COVID is new, as we're still dealing with it. And it'd be interesting to see what their comments are. Like, I know there's touchless point of sale for the students. I'm curious what the menu is. A few years ago, we did a top 10 in every school district or every school, what was purchased. So it'd be interesting to see how we are, within the next 30 days, whatever. So we'll report back on that after the October meeting.
Thanks, Pete.
The only other thing I'd like to note, Mike, I think you said everything very crisply and nicely. Operationally, though, they've also made flexible changes to our operations to make sure that, during the when we were doing construction, that kind of stuff, they're able to be flexible around that. But also, you know, as we changed some of our schedules, and we had like the SATs and the high school kind of having lunch at similar times, they were able to flex and move things around. So being able to control that and be able to operationalize it and be flexible with that operationally made it very bit easier for the students to get their food, and they modified and changed as necessary. So I think the program's been very successful. And if we, I don't want to lose that flexibility by going into a government program that might restrain that or restrict it or cause us to have operational changes that would cause problems possibly. So I think it's working well. We're making money. The kids are happy. The food's good. So that's my take on that.
Thank you, Joe.
Any other comments?
I have one other comment, which is I think with the government program, you have a limited portions of the not very good quality food. And I know, for example, my son who grew 4 inches in the last year, when he goes to lunch, he says, double it. And so they give him a double portion. And I think a lot of the growing boys, particularly in the high school, get a double portion. So they have that ability to eat more. And if they had the government program, that would be restricted.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Terrence Wall.
Yes, I have an item for new business.
Excellent.
Okay, thank you. First, briefly, I want to thank the Holmdel Foundation for Educational Excellence for a fantastic event, well attended at Bellworks, and also gave us an opportunity to speak with various parent groups who are raising money on behalf of Holmdel's children. And I thank them for that. I urge them to continue to do what they're doing and continue to partner with the Holmdel Board of Education. So I want to thank them as well. And also just briefly thank the student representatives, as always, for being here. The new business item I wanted to bring up is kind of interesting. I was asked this week in my public Holmdel Board of Education email by the teachers union to screen for their support, to be there next week, to go in front of them and interview with them for their support. The request was sent to the public Board of Education email account. So I'm responding then publicly. I did seek legal counsel because there's a unique relationship between the Board of Education and the union vis-a-vis negotiations, particularly since we're under expired contracts and we're negotiating actively. And I chair that group with our peers here. So I want to share with you and the public the data from the legal counsel that I've reached out to. And it's useful data that informs both this Board of Education, but really any Board of Education in the state of New Jersey, particularly for any member who's directly involved in contractual negotiations. Its advice speaks to any Board of Education member, but if you're involved in contractual negotiations, it's very specific. As I mentioned, I lead the negotiations with my peers on both the HDEA and the HDAA contracts, which have the single greatest impact, as everyone knows, on stabilizing property taxes in Holmdel Township. It's the single largest item in the budget, salary and wages, and it's during contract negotiations. So the invitation from the union required, from my perspective, attention and professional study. The legal counsel states in part, one, it would not be appropriate to accept the association's invitation for an endorsement, period. Two, the School Ethics Commission has ruled that it would be a conflict of interest for a board member receiving a union endorsement to participate with any negotiations in the union. So to attend, you're in conflict. To receive an endorsement, you're in conflict. I would have to immediately remove myself from any discussions and negotiations. I couldn't fully perform my duties as a Board of Education member. And three, it would be a conflict of interest while serving as the chair, particularly to seek such an endorsement, which I have not done. Under the School Ethics Act, each case must be examined on a case-by-case basis to determine whether support was provided with the intent to influence the member in the exercise of his official duties or her official duties, and whether in acting on an official matter, the member could receive some personal benefit or has acted to provide some unwarranted privilege to his political supporters or her political supporters. So there's also a potential for an ethics charge to be sustained if a board member were to surrender his or her independent judgment to a union or delivered some unwarranted benefit to the union as a result of political support. And for the folks that are data oriented that are listening, SEC advisory opinion 810-18 speaks to an involved board candidate who was endorsed by a local association against his wishes. Also, SEC advisory opinion 813-02 discusses the factors pertaining to a mandatory recusal from negotiations following a union endorsement. So all should be mindful of union activity that potentially interferes with, restrains, or attempts to coerce a public employer in the selection of their representative for the purposes of negotiations or the adjustment of grievances, which do come before this board. So in conclusion, I want to thank the HTEA for their invitation. I cannot legally accept it. In regard to an endorsement, respectfully, I don't want it. I want to vote on all matters before the Holmdel Board of Education, not just some. One of the NJEA members is leading a three-candidate ticket. They may be thrilled to get that union endorsement and any funding, and that's fine. I would encourage it, especially during a gubernatorial year. That's not my issue, but I urge transparency at all times. Lastly, a Board of Education should always be conflict-free and politics-free. We do not need politics in the Board of Education. And these are from conflicts you see, and much more concerning, the conflicts you cannot. Thank you.
Thank you, Terrence. Any other new business?
I had one small one. I am curious, Terrence, that's interesting, because I've only sat here for 7 years, and I don't think I've ever been solicited to, you know, on behalf of the HTA. So it's, I don't know if that's a new thing or what, but interesting. Mine is a simple one. The tents and tables, I thought they were getting erected this past week. Is there any update on that, Mike or Dr. Seitz?
Today.
Oh, today? Okay. Yeah. Awesome. So okay. Public, I guess there'll be enough tents for kids to have outdoor classes or lunch and things like that, or at least the possibility.
My understanding is the tents were installed either yesterday or today, and we cannot accommodate, of course, everyone. There is limited space available, but it's just one more option that'll help us with the students and getting them outside and in larger groups. But right now, they are installed, and the principals are working to use them as efficiently as they can.
Thank you. We have a presentation tonight. We're going to do a whole presentation on test scores. No, I'm just kidding. Assemblyman Schaffenberger is here, and he would like to give recognize our superstar student tonight. So, Jerry, if you could come up to the microphone. Yes, Assemblyman Schaffenberger is here, especially for you tonight, on behalf of the legislature.
Good evening, everybody. First of all, Vicki, thank you for inviting me and allowing me to do this. Hey, Mike, I know you're out there. When I first heard about this, you know, I'm one of those old geezers who had to have it explained to me exactly what this was. And I was just at an event down in Point Pleasant with Monmouth and Ocean officials. And when I told everyone where I was going, every one of those people knew about this. So it's really making the rounds, not only here in Holmdel, but certainly across the state. And it really is very impressive. So, Gia? Okay. So I'm going to read this proclamation. Here, come up a little bit so you can see it along with me. Whereas the Senate and General Assembly of the State of New Jersey are pleased to salute Gius Umarov, did I get that? Okay. An admired member of his Garden State community in recognition of his extraordinary abilities and skills. And whereas an exemplary student at Holmdel High School, Gius Umarov has earned a fair degree of acclaim by assisting Apple with not one, but two coding bugs he discovered, the most recent of which resulted in him being credited in a document describing the iTunes U 3.8.3 security update in September of 2020. And whereas Gius Umarov has exhibited a remarkable expertise in coding, having taught himself using the internet, checking out library books, and eventually asking his parents for a book on the subject for Christmas. And in addition to keeping his grades up, he has further distinguished himself as a tennis player. And whereas New Jersey's young people who set their goals high, who persevere in the pursuit of those goals, and who reach their desired milestones and accomplish their objectives, stand as an example and an inspiration to their fellow citizens of all ages. And whereas it is altogether proper and fitting for the legislature to pause in its deliberations to acknowledge Gius Umarov as a young man of strong character and exceptional determination. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Senate and General Assembly of the State of New Jersey that this legislature hereby lauds Gius Umarov, pays tribute to his meritorious record of excellence within all the spheres of his life, and extends sincere best wishes for his continued success in all future endeavors. And be further resolved that a duly authenticated copy of this resolution, signed by the Senate President and the Assembly Speaker, and attested by the Senate Secretary and the Assembly Clerk, be transmitted to Gius Umarov. Congratulations, Gius. Just one more thing I want to say. If when the time comes, you end up going to Monmouth University, please take my classes. I could be a student like you. So thank you and congratulations.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay. Can I say one more thing while you're looking for your closing? I just wanted to join Terrence in thanking the HFEE for their wonderful event, but also just to acknowledge all of the wonderful things they've done for the school and for creating such a great school community and really making giving gifts that have a huge impact on the school district, and that both I think the administration and the board really appreciates all of their hard work and dedication.
Yeah, it looked like a wonderful night. Thank you for posting the events. You know, unfortunately I couldn't attend, but I would have loved to attend it because it looked like a blast. And I like how everyone was wearing blue. It looked pretty awesome in the photos. So always appreciative of the HFEE and everything, and our parent groups for all that they're doing to really make this an extraordinary place, because without them, it wouldn't be as extraordinary as it is. Questions or comments from the public? Doesn't have to be on action items.
My name is Jaswinder, 21 Van Brackel. And I heard Dr. Sykes, first of all, let me so thank you for everything that you guys have done last year and also this year opening up the school. But I appreciate more last year because towards the end we were virtually like a normal school district where everything seemed normal. But surprisingly, there was a curveball thrown in by the governor, and I guess you guys have just fallen to your knees. So now the question is, this mask mandate in our school district is just because the governor wants it, yes or no? Anybody can answer that.
No, I mean, you direct your questions to me as the chair, and the mask mandate is imposed by the governor.
Okay. And what is the purpose of the school mask mandate? Is it the protection of kids, the teachers?
It's within his public health and safety emergency authority. I mean, I have my own objections over the executive order, so we could have a whole conversation about the constitutionality of it all. But as it relates to as a board member and the boards throughout this state, this has been imposed by the governor upon all the boards.
Standing here to give a lesson of constitution and not objecting to what is being done. All I'm looking is because everybody mentioned data a number of times. So I think most of the laws that we follow should have some data backing that law, yes or no?
I would agree.
Okay, so here's the data. This is from the CDC, cdc.gov. And this is from 1/1/20 through 9/4/2021. So could anybody guess what is the number of casualties or mortality for the kids between the ages of 0 and 17 because of COVID? Everyone looks at the big number, 643,000. One death is one too many. And everyone throws that number, 643,000. Does anybody know how many kids died because of COVID? And this is, I'm talking about almost 16 to 18 months of data. that CDC has given on their website? Anybody?
Well, you direct the question to anybody who knows this information. It's really, so I don't mind going back and forth.
Okay.
It's part of, but normally this is a point where you can make a statement. We listen, we hear you. I give you the opportunity to say as long as you want. I don't know the number, but I'm assuming it's not as high as, you're going to tell me it's not as high as anyone would think based on the numbers.
It's 412.
There you go.
So we are doing all of this because in the entire country, over a period of 16 months or 18 months, 1-1 through 1-9, so that's almost 20 months, 412 kids have died because of COVID. You know, far more number has died because of OD, because of teen crashing their cars. Have we done anything with respect to that?
As far as the countrywide deaths of
yes,
us, the Homedale Board of Education?
Yes.
Well, our limits are Homedale, but we are making sure our limitation is here in Homedale.
Okay,
we're following. I don't know of any. Okay. That number has never been reported to me. I know of none.
Here are the numbers. 64 plus, it's 502,863 people who have died. And that's, none of them have died because they were healthy. Almost everybody died because of comorbidity. Okay, so that's for the numbers. Did anybody think about the side effects of the mask for the kids? Did anybody object to the governor or the authorities, whoever that person
is? Okay, so what I did, let's rewind back to the beginning of August. When this executive order was issued, I penned a letter and sent it to the governor's office indicating I would like him to come here to Homedale and see all the work that we did to be successful to open up a school district last year, like you said, that was close to normal, correct? So I did send that. I also contacted the School Board Association to see if they could also follow up my correspondence to the governor's office to see if he could come and visit what we're doing here in school. Because what I do believe is that the Homedale School District is a model example as to how you can open up a school during a pandemic and keep school open. Because, sir, you don't understand how much I value the benefit of kids being in school every day.
Right.
And you don't understand, and I know this board shares in this concern, of how concerned we were last year when the idea of keeping our schools shut, what we did to make sure to get these schools open is a model. And that's why I invited the governor here, because a one size fits all to this doesn't work. That is my personal opinion. However, as I noted before, the governor doesn't care about Vicki Flynn's opinion. He doesn't care about the Homedale Board of Education's opinion. He doesn't care about your opinion and my opinion. He has made a decision that we have to adhere to as it relates to the mask. We continue to, and like I said, I've had multiple sources try to reach out to the governor's office and encourage him to come here, because I do believe this model should have been used for the schools that the state operates so that they could open schools, because those schools, which is, it's a crime, were closed last year. The Trentons, the Jersey Cities, the Pattersons. I don't even know if Patterson even opened yet this year because they ended up getting hit by a storm.
Right.
So that's a crime. So I think it would have behooved the governor to come here and see what a model school district looks like to operate during a pandemic. And so far he has declined my invitation. So as far as what I did for Homedale, we have taken that additional step. And as far as what I've tried to do outside of Homedale, because I do think about and I'm concerned about the kids outside of Homedale too that aren't going to school and didn't have the benefits. We were talking about studies before with the data that we were able to collect because we were open last year. We have measured learning loss amongst our students here in Homedale. And I share this story with many people. If Homedale, which was permitted to open up earlier than most other schools, has suffered a learning loss, I can't imagine the learning loss we're going to find everywhere else.
Right.
So we are doing what we can.
We are committed to staying open. We're committed to being safe, and we're committed to creating the best academic environment we can for our students and our teachers so that we can continue to have numbers like we shared today. I was very pleased to see that the numbers are trending very positively here. And we've been open. We've had every kid that can come besides like a quarantine is here. Staff members are here, which is different than last year. Last year, we didn't have those type of numbers. When we did open up full time here at the high school, we didn't have full enrollment. We have that now, and our numbers are trending beautifully. So we look very positive, and we will continue to do what we can and what's in our power and our authority to do so.
One of the terms I just want to throw out is hypercapnia or hypercarbia. Everybody can look out what it is. It's just a side effect of lack of oxygen or too much of, not lack as much of oxygen. It's more of excessive carbon dioxide in the body of an individual. Just have a look. Anyway, as far as the mask is concerned, there is a lot of data that I can show and throw. I'm not even like a scientist. I'm just a common man trying to make a living and who's been able to do this research. And I'm sure everybody on the board and everybody in the state legislature can also do that. By the way, the coronavirus is about 140 nanometer, and everybody who's wearing a mask, except Dr. Seitz, I think your pore size would be just about enough to stop any droplet. Everybody else is useless because the pore size is about 40 microns. And the droplets of these, of the virus carrying particulate matter is about 5 microns. So it's basically saying that I'm wearing a mask to stop the virus, that I'm putting around a chain link fence around my house to stop the mosquitoes to come inside. I hope you understand that. Anyway, here is my final thing that I wanted to share and wanted to make you aware about. And this all started way back in 2020 in March, when the greatest, I would say, scientist of our country said, we need to have a shutdown or a lockdown so that we can flatten the curve. Well, I'm sure everybody heard of that, flatten the curve, you know? And the curve was never flattened. The virus will never be flattened. It's never going to go away. It's going to exist as long as mankind is there. We can't do anything about it. What we can do is make sure that the people who are most vulnerable are the ones who are most protected, and the other people are not suffering on the pretext of public health, and especially not our kids. The kids are being used as slaves. It's a slavery, a new form of slavery, where we as parents have to comply to the authorities. I am here in front of the board today just to make an announcement that as a person who's read and who comes from the land of Mahatma Gandhi, a guy who inspired some of the greatest leaders in the world, like Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to be the first one to start the civil disobedience against the authority. So starting tomorrow, my daughter is not going to wear and comply with a stupid mask mandate, which has no use except theater. It's only a theater. It does not have any scientific purpose until and unless you are wearing an N95 or a surgical mask. Thank you once again, and I hope I am able to stand for these kids who have no voice, who have been mute, and who have been treated like slaves. And I hope I am able to teach them a lesson to stand up for what is right and to fight for your basic liberties. And I hope all of you can stand up with me against the authorities? Are we just silent because we are scared that we are going to get sued? If that was the case, there would be no kid who would have ever ridden a bicycle, because he would be falling down and we would be scared he's going to hurt himself or herself. I hope everybody who's listening to me and to whomever I can reach, this is the time to stand up for yourself, for your kids, and last but not the least, for your freedoms, which has been given by God to you. Thank you once again.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
Do you want to make a comment publicly on the microphone? You have to give your name and address, please.
I know everyone's tired and wants to go home. I haven't been to a board meeting in person before. This is my first time. My name is Dani Anatelli. I live at 4 Hayfield Court. And I'm here tonight because I just wanted to see how everything unfolded and kind of what we're looking at as far as our children's future. Because ultimately, most of us have moved to Homedale, New Jersey because of our children and their opportunities that they can gain in this community, which is such an incredible community of diverse people who are committed to giving their kids the best life that they possibly can. And I want us all to really think about this mask, because I will never pull a mask off anyone's face. I will never shame you or condemn you or even judge you for wearing it. In fact, I may choose to wear a mask. I may choose to put a mask on my child, but taking away a parent's freedom of choice when it comes to covering their child's airways, their face, nose, and mouth all day, every day is inhumane. You have the freedom of choice to choose to wear one, and God bless anyone who takes that freedom, holds on to it, and speaks out in a culture where it is not so easy to go out of the norm and not just follow the crowd. Are we doing the right thing right now? Many people are afraid to speak up because of their businesses, because of their loss of income, because of their loss of livelihood or being able to pay their bills. They're silent. In a free society, freedom of speech and freedom of choice is the fundamental right that we have as humans. I ask you all, when it comes to a lawsuit, is it worth risking the spiritual, mental, and physical health of our children because we are afraid to ignore a governor who's ignoring us? And with that, will we make the choice to stand up in a community that will back you? Because every single one of you, those who are brave, those who ask the question, does it feel right to my heart to cover a 2-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 16-year-old's face without their parents' consent? And if you think that a mandate that may be in line with your thought process right now cannot work in a different direction, if the narrative changes and their mandates are allowed to be what they are right now, you'll be the one sitting there with no choice. Is that a country where freedom, liberty, and justice for all are what's most important? I thank you for your time. I thank you all so much for your commitment to our children. You are the reason we are here. We will stand behind you. If you're brave,
you will have an army of people that also value freedom of choice right behind you. This affluent, blessed community can set an example because our district can free other districts if we just stand up and be brave. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Any other questions or comments?
Good evening. Wei Ping Wang, 19 Mulberry Lane, Hongdale. I just like to thank you, Linda, to bring up this issue about the lunch program. And I recently learned that from the Middletown and Marlborough and all other neighborhood town, they have the offered the free lunch, and we just don't have it. And the question here is, I heard today, you guys mentioned a couple of the reasons, but I really think that the very important things here is, as a Board of Education in the school, I think we want to keep transparency and the communication with the community. And I really think it's because we never know about why we don't have it and why the other school has that one. So it's very important that if you have make the such decision, I think it's better to have communicate to the all the parents and the family in the schools. I really think maybe if similar like our facing mask, maybe have a survey to send out to see what should we do and what we have now and what should compare to the federal programs we have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Jill Perez. I just wanted to raise the point that in a lot of our discussion tonight, we need to dig deeper and we need to really question the narrative because we aren't being fed information, right? So even when I ask questions about testing, right, or we're talking about the masks, a lot of what we believe is because of what we see through the media. The media is controlling a lot of our content. And we have to begin to say, you know, who is funding this, right? Because there is big money backing it all. So when I do ask that question about testing, the one question I did have was how much are we spending on it? And I, you know, I did look to see the different tests that were given, right? So I do see that, I believe it's SATS is taking both LinkedIn and the MAPS. And then, you know, in September, we have, I am not even familiar with this, the New Jersey Start Strong. Mm-hmm. So it's, our kids are receiving a lot of tests and they're not free. You know, so when I look at all this, right, I look at the fact that there's always been corporations who have wanted to tap into federal dollars. I mean, there's a lot of people who come to, who are involved in public education. Almost a quarter of the population is involved in it. So there's tremendous amounts of money there. And for many years, corporations have always tried to tap into those fundings. They try to create different private schools and other ways of getting in there. And they realized it's expensive to run these things. But to me, they found a loophole with the tests, right? Because now we have this captive audience, right? We have third graders, we have fourth graders, we have fifth graders. Now we're even doing, you know, first and second. And actually, when I had a kindergartner here, they were supposed to take a test then. And I wrote a note and said I might wouldn't test my kindergartner. But we have so many captive audiences that these corporations have figured out how they can continue with this huge profit. And so even when we look at our students right now, right, because I know a big part of this mask is, right, our little ones aren't vaccinated. And what's going to happen when we refuse that vaccine because it hasn't been around long enough, right? And we can go back and look at data because when, you know, in the late 70s, when there was swine flu and maybe a couple dozen people died, which is absolutely serious, it was taken off the market because we could sue the pharmaceuticals. Can't do that anymore. So all these corporations that are making so much money, right, the pharmaceuticals, the testing industries, whatever it may be, they have figured out that there's this audience that is completely captive. And so, you know, we're fearful for many different ends, right? We're fearful for our health. We're fearful that our kids are you know, not doing as well as other places. And so what's the answer, right? Well, the answer is let's give all these corporations tremendous amounts of money and they're going to solve our problem. But they're not, right? They're really just allowing us to live at this very superficial place. And I don't think that we're really embracing what it means to be healthy or what it really means to be well-rounded educationally. And so we're in a place right now where we can make change for our children. And yes, we moved here to Hinsdale because we want the best for our kids. And I do believe that we have a community that will stand back, that will stand behind decisions if they're the best for our kids. Because I do believe that in this very divided country, the way we're going to get through this is by doing what's best for our kids and creating a whole new world for them where we're going to say, you know what? You are more important than the profits that are involved. And I'll tell you, I have been reading a lot of research about what's going on, because this is not new, these mandates. You know, there's teachers in New York City that are being fired this week. And I was just reading a biography, actually, of the creator of the Raggedy Ann doll. And his daughter, Marcella, died at the age of 13 after getting a shot at school. Okay. And what he actually had access to newspapers because he was a cartoonist. And he began to do very controversial illustrations pointing out that our kids' lives were not as valuable as the profit that could be made from them. So this has been going on for a very long time. And we are at a point where we need to do something for our children. And that means we need to be looking at everything that's happening in schools because they're institutions. And these institutions are the place where good change can happen, right? We need to say this isn't working anymore, but what can we do to make everyone healthier and better and bring people together? So that's kind of the point, you know, I wanted to talk about with was how much this costs, not just financially, right? But emotionally too. And at what point will we stop just believing the propaganda and begin to question what's really going on? So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Public comment? Two hands? Are they up or no?
They are.
Who's putting them on? Oh, there's.
Hello?
Oh, Danielle and Prepeduto?
Danielle and Prepeduto, 18 Winthrop Drive. I would like to circle back to Elizabeth's report. I love Elizabeth's reports. They're very detailed and informative. And I'd like to think that, you know, like everyone else has said, we moved to Hinsdale for the education. As my children have progressed through the schools, the grades, different grades, we had very low class sizes. Hinsdale's known for it. My son, when he was in kindergarten, there were 16, 17 kids. Kindergarten classes now have 24 to 25 students in them. My son's fifth grade class has 28 students in the literacy class. I'd like to think that this happened because we decided to specialize teachers as science and social studies. So we removed a section and now class sizes have increased. And I'd like to think that now seeing what's going on the last 3 weeks school started, that we take a step back next year, because I know we can't fix it this year, because I wouldn't want my son moved out of his class. But I think we need to get back to the basics and get these class numbers down.
Thanks, Danielle.
Thanks, Vicki. Bye, everybody.
I agree. You know me and my class size argument.
And I just want to thank Danielle for appreciating my notes, because I do, it is a,
it's not a labor of love.
It's just a labor. But I really care, and I'm glad you realize it. Thank you.
Who's next? Denise King.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Hi, Denise.
Hi, how are you, Vicki?
Hanging in there.
So I came in late to this game a little bit. We accepted award this evening for Monmouth County. But I did get a lot of text messages regarding Terrence's comment about the HTEA. And so I'd like to clarify, and Vicki, as you know, because you participated in a screening for your assembly race, screenings are done for all different types of positions and for Board of Education, since there are three seats up and there's only There's six people running for those seats. The HTEA is giving every candidate the opportunity to meet with a screening committee that's a representation of people who not only work in the district but live in the community, as well as representation from all the different buildings, so that we can have an understanding of what the background is of every candidate running. There is no intention by any means to try to influence any individual for favors or for something along the lines of negotiations, which, by the way, didn't even cross our minds. I actually did text Terrence to ask him if he had a campaign email, because of the fact that every other person running for this position or those three positions on the board already had an email, and we felt it would be unfair and unjust not to include every single person who is running for the board. Now, if they choose not to participate, that is up to them. And of course, if Terrence feels that that, you know, would put a conflict of interest with negotiations, then of course we will make sure that everybody on the committee understands that it is a conflict of interest, and that we would consider him based on his current position in the board. But I just want to clarify that screenings happen all the time in public office, and the screenings, we follow PAC guidelines that are very, very clear. And that is the only situation that this is occurring. So Terrence, I'm sorry if you took it as something else, but that was not the case. We just didn't want to exclude you as an individual running for the board.
And I thank you, Denise. We know each other a long time, and it's nothing about how I feel. It's just the legal analysis that provided the background that indicated that it's a conflict. So when you get a chance to listen to the recording, you'll see it very much speaks to the law rather than how.
That's what I was going to say to her. Denise, you have a conversation with Paul offline. I did participate in a screening for my assembly candidacy, but during my two runs for the Board of Ed, there's never been anything here for me as my candidacy.
Yeah, so
I just want to make sure the record is clear. It's only in my capacity as an assembly candidate, never as a Board of Ed candidate. But the Denise, I'd have you talk to Paul, because there's two ethics decisions that would render a board member incapable of participating in negotiations if they do receive the endorsement of of the union.
Right, and that would be for me, or if she's successful, your fellow member of the union who's running as part of the group of six this year.
What? Oh, I have no idea, but we have not gotten any responses back. But yes, I understand that. That is why, for example, I'm not running the screening, just because I'm on negotiations, to be clear.
Well, HTEA is a subset of the NJEA, which is strongest, most successful, powerful labor union in the state. So it's inextricably linked from the analysis I've read. All right. And that's the reason why, but thank you. I do appreciate it.
We're all entitled to our opinions, but I wanted to clarify that so no one took the position that we were trying to gain favor for any capacity.
I'm confident with that. I just want to keep the politics out and the transparency across the board in.
Of course, absolutely. That's why everybody gets invited. Thank you very much for listening.
And Terrence, I thank you for ensuring compliance with the school ethics code.
It's my obligation. Thank you.
That's right. That's it. All right. We don't need executive session. So can I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
All in favor or any discussion? Aye. Okay. Just checking. Good night, everyone.